This is the Visual Developers Podcast with your hosts, Matt Varghese and Ben Parker. From maker interviews to tutorials and more, we're here to talk about all things no code.
Hi, everybody. Ben here with Visual Dev FM, and we're back for another episode, episode number 14. We're going to talk about how to price and sell no-code projects. But first, as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Lacey and Matt.
Hello.
Hello.
So back for another episode, and as usual, we're going to start with our no-code roundup. So what's new in no-code? The latest is happening. And so I just wanted to start. I saw a really interesting tweet from Vlad of Webflow fame, and he posted a job alert. So Webflow is looking for a senior product manager to lead the designer experience team. So essentially, over that experience that people have when they're in the designer, building websites and Webflow. And so it would be a super, it's an incredible team, super cool gig. And so if you're interested in that, definitely reach out, because I think that's a cool deal. Just wanted to share that one to start. But the one thing that we were all super interested in, the tool that really grabbed our attention, was the number one product of the day on Product Hunt, no code API, which I'm sure you, if you've heard about it at this point, but it's got some really good integrations to start out with: Google Sheets, Airtable, Google Analytics, you know, more coming soon. And it just allows you to turn your endpoints, any of these, into an API and to create some simple docs and to start using it with your product. So I was really excited about this. I don't know about you two, but this is something that really I was like, oh my gosh, this is wonderful.
This is super dope, and I feel like it's definitely needed, because right now, like, I think no code is in a it's in a good spot, and like a lot of people are iterating quickly, but I feel like there are some good tools. I'm working with APIs, Parabola, Integromat, Zapier, all of them work with API as well. But I think one of the things that we all talked about, on a video call privately some other time, was no code is all about being able to connect all these different tools together and build your own app that way. And so anything that is built that revolves around connecting APIs or building your own API, I'm here for it, because it is a great extension of no code, and it gets us closer to building these MVPs that we want to build.
I agree. I think being able to stitch tools together in a very powerful way, with, you know, obviously without using code, without bringing in a developer, I'm really curious. I'm excited to see what people are going to build with these things, because already my mind is just being blown with what people are doing just on one platform. I can't imagine if you are able to pull in other data and information, how robust these applications are really going to be.
And this is one, the pricing seems pretty straightforward and affordable. And so I'm excited to give this a try. Gonna give it a go sometime soon here in the next week and just see what it's all about. But looking forward to taking a run at it. So that's new. Also, we haven't talked about it yet, but, and I'm going to, Bailey, I'm sorry, I'm going to absolutely butcher your last name, so get ready. Bailey Simrell. Is that right? You guys think I got that right?
I'm going to go so. With it. I think that sounds good.
Yeah. Bailey, if you don't know Bailey, great, great person. Super brilliant. Do a lot of no-code work. And he announced a new venture, memberchat.io. So if you're a no-code maker and you're looking for some chat functionality, this is going to be right up your alley. And I know this is going to be incredible, and I can't wait to see all the awesome stuff that comes out of this, which should be pretty cool. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so is this chat for like your website, web app, that's like a straight integration with it?
So I don't know a ton of details. Mm-hmm. I know he did message me some stuff. I don't want to share anything because I don't know what's shareable yet. But we need to have Bailey on the podcast. I say this about a lot.
Sure.
We need to have Bailey on the podcast to talk about it. But it is a tool that's going to go with your membership site. that allow your members to chat. So if you're looking to give, like if you have a membership gated content site and you're looking to give your members the ability to chat with one another in real time, this is going to be the tool for you.
Oh, that's exciting.
Really unlock a lot of use cases and some really, I'm excited about it. I know that he's amped and if you've seen any of the things that they've built or done, it's always really great stuff. So I'm really looking forward to what this turns into. So
mm-hmm.
Pretty cool. Some MakerPad things. We haven't really mentioned MakerPad on this podcast. And I don't, it's just the problem is they post so many things. I don't even know, like.
They stay completely busy with
right. I would have
tutorials to, and videos and all that.
We would need like a running 5-minute segment at the beginning of each episode to like list all the stuff that
got added. Move over Glide, like mm-hmm. MakerPad is the one that's going to have the most no code updates.
Right.
It's a fact. But, there are some cool things, you know. Aaron, who works with MakerPad, he's got an email newsletter that is really cool and an online course that's super awesome. It's outside of MakerPad. We'll have links in the show description, but we've never mentioned those before. It's really good. Tom from MakerPad has his email newsletter, and he's got No Code Live, which is just rolling out, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really cool, and I'm excited about that. And then Tom tweeted some stuff today, new tutorials, workshops, special projects, and then some really secret stuff that they've got coming in 2020 that they can't talk about yet, but I'm super excited to hear all about. So links to all this in the show description so you can go check it out. I think it's going to be really cool. So something to keep up with. And then Lacey, you grabbed this one. It looks like JetBoost has some new stuff.
Yes. So you could now have dynamic filters on your Webflow site within your CMS collections. So Chris, the founder of JetBoost, is building on top of the Webflow CMS, which the Webflow CMS, we all know, is really powerful as it is. So with these, kind of think of them as like these power-ups on top of the CMS, but you're not having to write code. So having the like dynamic filters, I've been to the forums and seen that over and over and over again of people needing some help with wanting some more filtering options in there. And so now he's built this off of it, and his walkthrough, really everything about JetBoost is really clean and simple. It's not difficult to navigate or add this onto your Webflow project. So I'm really excited that he's pushing this out. And he said that Connor Finlinson from the Unicorn Factory mm-hmm. is already using it and building a directory with it. So that's really exciting.
And going back to MakerPad actually just implemented this on their website too. And this is one of my favorite parts of their website. If you go there, you can essentially like, hey, here are my needs. I need to collect payments. Yes. I need to do X, Y, and Z. And so you can click each of these essentially tags, and it'll filter, okay, this is a tool you should use. And they're using JetBoost. So mm-hmm. shout out to Chris. Shout out to JetBoost. Chris is also a really nice person.
That makes it even better. Yes. He is. Yeah, I think you weren't there, Matt, but yeah, Ben and I met him in San Francisco at the No Code Conf, and he was such a nice guy. And so
he's really the best. Super kind and really humble and unbelievably brilliant. Can't say enough great things about Chris. Like I'm excited to give this a go because it looks really cool. As someone who has a couple of clonables out there for using like List.js and things like that, and those are great, and it's great to be able to filter, but you're going to have to dive into the world of code just a little bit in order to use those. And so it's awesome that you can no code this and using it with Webflow. So super excited about that and stoked to give it a try. And then something that I saw that I really caught my eye, it was the number 3 product of the day on Product Hunt, was this past Wednesday, the day after our last podcast launched, is the Airtable Chrome extension. I don't know if you two saw this.
No, but I haven't.
It is unbelievably powerful. So it's a Chrome extension, and it literally allows you can click it. It brings up a menu and you can add a new row to your Airtable, and it's got a way for you to click a button to add an image, and you can select an image on the page and it'll add that image into that field. Or you can like click and drag and take a screenshot of the page and that's added. It is super incredible. When it comes to like scraping a website or grabbing content off of it, to be on the page, be able to copy, paste in,
click,
grab, select. I mean, just the power there and the speed that it's going to give you on your projects is super incredible.
And I go through that exact same workflow that you just described whenever I'm like building a website and I'm looking for inspiration. I'm always like, oh, okay, I'll go to, you know, Lapa Ninja or something like that. And they got a nice screenshot of the image, but it's always me having to go flip between, you know, different windows to copy and paste all information. So this is really nice. Cause I know Notion has something similar too, but I'm not really using Notion for tables that much because it's not great with tables, but I'm excited to check this out.
Mm-hmm. Well, shots fired at Notion.
It'll get better. It'll get better.
I personally am on a Coda kick still and can't get enough of it. The power with Coda is out of this world. And we need to do a full episode
and an interview, something.
We've had it on the books. We need to get Al on to come talk Coda.
For sure.
I've got even a whole outline of what I want to talk about, and we got to get that done. So soon, TM. So this week, and that's it for No Code Roundup this week. There wasn't a whole lot of things happening. I mean, I think everybody's kind of getting back into the groove of the new year, and so that's all the new things in the No Code Roundup. If we missed something, feel free to hit us up and let us know. Today we wanted to talk about, you know, things to know when you're pricing a no code or a low code project. So it is something that people ask about, or things that people are curious about is, you know, if I'm building this, how do I go about pricing it? And so today we just wanted to really dive into that. And so Matt, really, you should drive this section. You put together the outline. I'm happy to drive if you want.
I'm happy to talk about this, but I think all three of us being in the space that we're in, and, you know, all three of us have freelanced and, you know, been in the agency world. Like, I think all of us have something to add. So if I'm ever missing something here, just jump in. But like Ben said, like pricing a no code project can be, you know, there's a lot of variables to consider. And it definitely varies, based on the scope of the project. So that's kind of like the first thing to consider whenever you're building a no code project is, what am I building? What are the requirements of the app? What do I need to know? Is it going to be a simple, you know, marketing page versus a full on, you know, e-commerce website or something of that nature? Or is it going to be a mobile app? Or does it need to be a progressive web app? There's just so many questions you need to ask. And a lot of times maybe it's, oh yeah, we need the marketing page and we also need to be able to sell and we also need a mobile app, but that mobile app, you know, it has to work on iPad, which means Glide Apps is no longer in the mix. So it's like, you have to determine the scope first, instead of, just kind of winging it, because I winged it in my start. And I feel like there was a lot of, issues that arose from that. So how do you guys go about scoping your projects whenever you do client work?
It's a great question. I have a pretty extensive survey. It lets me know a client is serious, because if they get through that form, then I'll know they're, but basically I break it down into a bunch of different parts, just from design to functionality to, you know, other services, as far as, you know, if it's SEO and social, and, you know, I have a background in video, so I still do some video production type things. And so, you know, do they need any video work? I try to get the whole scope. You know, are there products involved, and are we selling things? And, you know, and then is this something that, you know, previous, do you already have designs? Is there a designer in house, or am I just building what you have? Or, you know, are we going to have to really design this, because that makes a really big difference, you know, in how I price it. So it's trying to figure out where they're at. And it's pretty extensive and thorough.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm similar. I guess I have a long questionnaire, but I do it over the phone only because I like to, spitball back and forth with them different ideas or different, concepts. And I think sometimes in my background, people, will come to just like, well, I want a website. It's like, great. And what kind of website do you want? How many pages are we talking? What kind of functionality? A lot like what Ben just said, questions. Do you have a designer? What do you need? And for me, that's easier over the phone. And a lot of probably 90% of my clients would say that they're not technical, in quotes, but that they just kind of want to give me the ideas. Here's what I want to get to the end. And then you make it happen and come to me back, back to me for changes and final decisions. So,
right. Yeah. And I always want to have do you have a brand guide? What do you need a logo on top of it? Right. And then, what can you share that brand guide with me? Do you have your fonts? Are they licensed? Do you have stock images? Am I going to have to go get images for you? Do I need to go take, take some photos? Mm-hmm. Like what does all this look like? Just really trying to get a good understanding of what they have, what they want. And then, sometimes people come back and if they say, I don't know a lot of stuff, or even
they're probably not going
to just
be
some
plan.
Of it. Yeah, I just tend to avoid those projects because, mm-hmm. Not all the time. You can kind of feel if a client has a really good personality or brand or story to tell, and they're maybe unsure of some things. That's one thing. But when clients come back and they're like, I don't know, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's okay.
Right.
I want to work with you. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's good to know all of that in advance because, you don't want to get all the way through a project or halfway through a project and realize, oh, this client's going to be, a pain in the butt to work with. Because
right.
when you build products for someone else, the most valuable thing you have is your time. Mm-hmm. So you want to be able to keep people on track. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to take on more projects. And if you can't take on more projects, you can't make money. So that's so important to be able to scope that out. And I like what you said, Lacey, about the phone calls. So I hate phone calls mm-hmm. with all my heart. So I send things over type form. But that said, I think phone calls are much, much better at collecting this information because it's a lot easier to detect tone and intent over the phone. And it's like how certain and confident someone is in their answer versus on a type form. So there's mm-hmm. definitely drawbacks in each. But I would say figure out your style, figure out what works best for you. And then just roll.
There are two pieces here. I mean, so for me, I don't do the phone call, but I do phone calls. So, or video calls or meetings. So typically before I even do the questionnaire, I just do an initial meeting. Let's talk about your
project. That's over the phone.
Yeah. Or in person, right? What are you doing? What are you building? Can you give me an elevator pitch? Sometimes I don't even want to send the questionnaire. a client's going to be hard to work with.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not interested in this. Mm-hmm. And I can let them know, hey, this just doesn't seem like a project that's a good fit for me. And, here's some other people who might be good to reach out to.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of work they do. Or maybe it's such a weird meeting that I don't recommend anybody. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. But there definitely, it's one of those things. And then after I get the questionnaire, I'll do a video call or a phone call and I just talk through things. Like I like to have time to process their answers. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Or look at that brand book. Like, oh, let me really dive in. Oh, hey, I noticed this was made in 1992 and it was expressly made for print layout. does it look like you have anything more modern? So do you have somebody working on that piece, for really getting this up to date with digital, or, is that something you need me to do? I like to be able to try to tackle and parse through those pieces. And I always find that getting the information up front and then circling back around gives me time. Personally, it's how I personally like to work. It gives me really time to process
for sure
where they're at.
And yeah, I think phone calls are very essential pieces of the process. I still do them. I just don't like doing them. Yeah. That's a big difference here.
I'm awkward.
I am that way too. So, so essentially the clearer the scope that you can get, the better, because one, you're going to know what you're getting into and you can price accordingly. And two, your contract can reflect that. And that kind of gets into my other point of essentially you need to have contracts, because projects can and will, especially if you're doing it long enough, they will go south. And so you want to have something in place that, you know, you don't want to do $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 of work and some client can just back out and you're left with nothing, even though you, you know, delivered a finished product. So I think contracts are really important. I don't know. Do you all know of any good resources? I know back in the day when I was first starting, there was, like a designer's website. I think it was like AIGA or something like that, that had a sample contract that people could download. I know my initial contract was essentially just pulling together. Like, I looked at a bunch of contracts I found on the internet, because in the beginning I couldn't hire a lawyer. I built my first website for $400 or something like that. I think I just kind of scraped along until I, you know, could get an attorney. To write a contract. But I think just even if it's like a simple document that's like, yo, here's the scope, here's who owns this, this is who is responsible for this, here's our timeline. I just think all those pieces of information, even if it's like 2 pages long and it's not like jargony, I mean, our contracts aren't jargony at all, but I think that information is just so important to have written down and agreed upon by both parties.
Well, there's a couple of things you can do here. If you can't afford a lawyer, I mean, LegalZoom, Rocket Lawyer. I mean, yeah, but I mean, there are online services. As long as it's safe and something that covers you, it's not super extensive, and you have your scope well defined in writing as an addendum to it or what have you. Yeah. That can typically cover you. Take none of this as legal advice, please. There are places. And then if you search, there's some free contract templates out there. I know, I think Hello Bonsai and some different online invoicing pieces, they might have some resources that you can get, which are good. And Matt, you made a point that you skipped over, but I think it goes hand in hand with this. It's, oh, hey, it's simple. And you go, oh, if it's a simple thing, I don't need a contract. No big deal. And so you do it, and then scope creep comes in, and you know they're like, oh, but can we just go ahead and add this in? And or you'll have the client who they fooled you in your pre-interviews, and they're micromanagers to the nth degree, and you're like, oh, no. Yep. And, you know,
it happens. It every little definitely pixel, happens. Right?
Yeah. Or like you'll negotiate with someone, and you're like, these are really great people, and then you get the deal, and they're like, let me introduce you to Bob, who's going to be managing this project, who you've never met before, and it turns out, you know, Bob cares about some unbelievable details that nobody should care about, and
100%.
You know, now you put in all, you have to put in all this extra time on all these revisions, and there is no contract to protect you to say like, hey. You know, what have you, I can't, like, you can't back out of that. You can't say, oh, I'm just going to go ahead and bill for the time that I've worked and walk away. There's nothing that protects you, and there's nothing that protects them, right? You want it to be fair, both sides
for sure. Protected.
And so definitely
simple builds are rarely simple. I've actually never seen someone that's pitched me a simple build. It's never been like super straightforward. There's always like some element of complexity there that I just didn't account for. And so a lot of these points that we're talking about today are things that like I've definitely gone through myself, and I think is somewhat common for other freelancers as well. I mean, scope creep, it happens all the time. It happens to me all the time. It's just, you got to know when to set your foot down and, you know, charge accordingly if you do have scope.
Well, when people say, oh, it's a simple project, I'm like, why are you selling me? Like, okay, you want something, you need something. This means you probably don't have the budget to hire me. But you want something, and you probably want something a little outside of your price range. Or it's somebody who severely undervalues your work, right? They're like, oh, here, I'm going to pay you $500 to do this. And you're like, oh, what? 500, like, you know, and so it gets weird. And then they want like 30-page site for $500, and and they don't understand why that might not be attractive to you, and something that is you want to do. And so it can definitely be confusing and frustrating, you know, when people say this is simple, this will be real easy. Rare is that. I mean, if you get that from somebody who's been in the business a long time or somebody you really trust, it's different than just a client who's like
a stranger. Hey, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right. Exactly.
Next project up. Next point up is Matt talked about is who is maintaining the website,
right?
So that's something to think about afterwards, but. And let's come back to that one. Let's come back to that one towards the end, because really maintaining comes back to after you've handed off ownership. But it does come into – it is something you want to consider when you're pricing, because, you know, if they're going to be coming back to you, hopefully you've got an hourly rate you're charging them when you're doing updates, or if they're going to have a lot of regular things, a lot of people like to do quarterly fees. So I'm going to charge you every quarter for whatever amount, and then that gets you a bank of hours, and you can use those hours to, you know, XYZ, what have you. So you kind of want to know who's maintaining the website, because it's going to be you. You want to be able to build that in, make sure people know that if you expect me to do this work afterwards, I expect to get paid for that. Like, this
as it should
is
be.
Not, yeah, it's not in perpetuity. Like, I just work on this for forever because I built it. So you definitely want to keep that in mind. When you're pricing these out.
Can I interrupt and go to a different point that's not written in our outline?
Yeah.
So
no,
how do you respond to people that say, oh, I can get, you know, a website for $10 on Upwork or Fiverr, like that. What's your common response or comeback to that question?
I hope you can. Congratulations. Right. Yeah, that's great. I'm happy for you. My response is they're not a client I want.
Oh, 100%.
And it's not, that's not being, I'm not trying to be mean or rude. It's just that, you know, like I want to work with somebody who wants to, like I pay a fair price when I have somebody do work for me. I want somebody to do the same. And if they want something like that, like I'll try to help them, like, hey, you could go try, here's a handful of tools you could give a try to maybe get what you want. And here's some links and resources, and I wish you the best. Right. But if you want to pay like that really low range, that's unfortunately. And then here's what I'll say, cause I feel like I've heard this conversation a lot. There are a lot of people who are like, well, I know they're not offering a lot, but and I know you laughed at this earlier, Ben, but $500 is $500. That's $500.
Sure.
And, you know, and when you are working and you're like, I need $500. I do need the $500. It's tempting to just keep taking those jobs.
Yeah.
I'm going to piecemeal it, 1,000 here, 500 there. I would highly encourage you to, if you're doing that, to stop. And I can't speak to your situation or where you're at, but what I can say is the more you do that, the more it pigeonholes you into lower paying jobs. And basically people who paid you not a lot of money will tell their buddy, like, hey, this person will build it for cheap.
Right.
Cheap. Yeah. They work way too cheap. You ought to go get them to build the site. Instead of, there's a point in my career where I kind of got dressed down by a fellow designer developer. And he basically told me, like, your work is, and this is, I don't believe, this is where I have a hard time. He thinks my work is really good. I have a hard time bragging on myself, but he was lecturing me saying, like, your work is good enough that you should be charging way more money. And so I, on a whim, took that advice, and I stopped taking low paying jobs and I started taking higher paying jobs. Mm-hmm. And there was a while where I was getting no work because I was bidding really high. And there's a point there where it's scary, because you're like, man, I turned down 6 or 7 of these, you know, lower paying jobs. But when you get that first gig that hits in the sweet spot for you, and it's a higher paying job or a higher paying client project, and you get to work with them, you spend time on it, you get to really make it what it should be. Mm-hmm. It reflects the value of what you can deliver in your work, and then you get that payoff. It's really good. And now those people, you've worked with that client and they paid you a good amount of money and you did them hopefully a really great job. Now they go back to their network and they say, hey, I hired so-and-so.
Yeah.
And it's cost, but it was worth every penny for me. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, and then now you're in this circle of recommendation, this network of recommendation where you're actually getting that pay that you want and that you deserve. So, just something to keep in mind when you price those things lower, when people come back and say, I could get somebody to do it for X, Y, and Z. And you go, okay, well, I'll do it for whatever. Fight that urge.
Yeah.
I've noticed that. So there was a point in time where, or like I said earlier in the podcast, you know, there was a point in time where I was selling websites for $400, because I don't think there's anything wrong with selling it for $400. Like let me say this carefully. If you're just starting out, price it at whatever you'd like. But I know for me in the beginning, it was hard to get work, like my very first project, unless I did it for free. And so getting that first 400, I think, was a stepping stone in terms of getting to, you know, the $1,000 projects, and then the $5,000 projects, and then $10,000 projects, and then $15,000. Like, I think everything builds on each other. So I don't think there's anything wrong with doing a $400 project. It's just you should not stay there. I had a client, and this is one of the worst pieces of advice I've ever received in my life, and it was in their best interest to tell me this, and they told me, you'll never be able to sell a website for more than $1,000. And there was a point in time where I was, like, really, really bummed about it. I was like, man, how do I make a career, like these other people? And this is when I was like fresh out of high school, just starting my company. And so it was like a big bummer. And I just kind of, someone else that was looking out for my best interest was like, no, you need to be doubling your price every year. And I was terrified of that. I was like, doubling, like, no one is going to hire me. Like, I live in Oklahoma City where the cost of living is super low. And some people I'm talking to that will give me the time of day right now, or they don't really have huge budgets. And he just, I mean, my buddy Hobbs deserves a shout out for this, because he just kind of pushed me to keep, you know, bettering myself work-wise. You know, the quality of my work was increasing, but also doubling my rate, because I was literally putting in hours and hours a day trying to hone in my craft. And what ended up happening is when I doubled my rate, I got better clients and I got more clients, and I got clients with a higher budget. It's just like, it's weird how it works out.
It's counterintuitive, but it works.
Yeah.
And but you're right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with those jobs. I took those jobs when I was first starting. In fact, you have people who are like, never work on spec or never work for free. And
I disagree.
At this point in my career, I might do that. Mm-hmm. But you know, when I was getting started, I wanted to prove myself. I wanted to take a project. If that was a good project, I wanted to take it and I wanted to knock it out of the park and prove to people that I can do good work. And, you know, and like you said, it's about honing that craft and learning. I wanted to get better. I wanted to flex my muscles. I wanted to do something and look at it and go, you know what? I can do better next time. Like, I learned something 100%. Here I can take this to the next level the next time I get a client. And so it's not that there's anything wrong with being there. I mean, you're 1,000% right. But what I would say is if you're building things with no code and you found Webflow, Bubble, Card, any of these, and you're building these really great websites, and not only are you building great websites, but you're building like this crazy backend functionality that you're essentially building, you're building apps. And you're doing all this work that people charge a lot of money for that.
100%.
And so what I would encourage you to do is don't sell yourself short, you know, and,
for sure.
And make sure that you're being paid for the value that you're delivering.
Right. And I think to that, so I've heard so, and it goes without saying, but there are a lot of people that are saying like how much you can build with no code tools and how much faster it is. And I had a prospective client come up to me and they're like, well, why is the price this much if it doesn't take you as long to do what you're doing? And so I felt the need to gently educate them on, I am where I am now because of the years of my back end and getting here is not just that I stumbled upon this tool 100%. And all yep. of a sudden now I know how to do this. And so, and I think that that's really important, is that you have a value of what you're delivering and you deserve to be paid on that value. And if you have someone that approaches you and you can't agree on the value, then they're not a good client for you. And I get the position of like needing the money and having to take the project. You know, we've all been there, but I totally agree with you guys that as soon as you can stop and make that pivot, it really does start to change the client outlook and your work.
100%.
You're 1,000% right. It's one of those things where, yeah, I'm bidding the job based on the value I'm providing you. It's and you know, there are the pieces that go into it as well. And this goes to another point, which I don't think is even on the list, but you know, there are two different ways to really, well, there are multiple ways you can price a project, but personally, well, you know, the basis are a lot of people like to do hourly, and they'll mm-hmm. bill that hourly rate over and over and over again, and they have to, I hate hourly work. I like
yeah,
to
me too.
I like to bid on a project and have a timeline that we agree to follow.
I feel like that's more comfortable for everyone involved, because when I say, you know, this is going to be $150 an hour or $75 an hour or whatever, and you don't really good, like you're like, okay, this will take anywhere between 10 and 30 hours based on the scope or something like that. It doesn't really give the client a lot of knowledge in terms of what they're going to be paying. And I just feel like fixed rate with, you know, provisions in the contract that say, you know, if the scope is increased, then, you know, this fixed rate will be modified accordingly. I feel like fixed rate is just more comfortable for everyone involved. Lacey, what mm-hmm. do? Do you hourly mm-hmm. or do you fixed?
I do fixed for projects and then hourly for any maintenance or updates or anything like that. But I should say hourly, I bill in 15-minute increments. So even if it takes me 5 minutes to do something, I still bill for 15 minutes because I'm having to stop what I'm doing, jump into another workflow, jump back out. And I mean, if I'm, you know, you could ping me nonstop for 5-minute tasks, and that's just ends up being a waste of time and
for sure.
Not a good use of time. Right. So yeah, and most people, like, I've never had pushback on it before ever, and I think I'm I value my time, and so if we can get a bunch of tasks and put them together and I can knock them out in 15 minutes, then great. So
for
yeah
sure.
I like doing it that way.
I would be interested to hear, so let's say I'm just starting out and I'm just, I want to start maybe a no-code agency like 80-20, or I want to start, you know, no-code freelancing. Do you think it is wise or a bad idea to do like spec work or free work or things of that regard, if you can? Obviously, the free work conversation revolves around the assumption that you are in a spot where you can take the time to do that. A lot of people aren't really afforded that same opportunity. Mm-hmm. But let's say you are starting out and you are afforded that opportunity to do free work. Would you do it?
I think it would depend on the scope of the work, how much was involved, because I'm always a big fan. Like, I'm a lifetime learner. I'm learning. So if learn with a purpose of delivering something to someone, that to me is a win. But I think maybe depending on the type of project, I wouldn't do a full build out like a website or a, you know, multi-page like difficulty,
sure,
you know, high difficulty. But I think I would potentially do some things if I was just starting out. And also it's a good value add for your portfolio to say that you have worked with, you know,
exactly.
Other people. So
right. What if it was a project that you decided, like you picked yourself and you just kind of built it and, you know, set, like, let's say you have a famous person that you like. I mean, this is literally how I landed Chance as a client. Like, I was lucky and in a good position to where I could, you know, spend time on spec work. But the beginning of our relationship was just me building Snapchat filters for him and putting it at every arena on his tour in like 2016 or something like that. And it was low cost enough to where like I wasn't, you know, it wasn't expensive, but it did take a lot of time. And he didn't ask me. I mean, I was a nobody. I still am a nobody in terms of the agency world. I think that was really helpful for me because I was like, I really want to work with this person. And so it's nice because I think when you pick the project, you can decide the scope yourself because right. that person's not even in the conversation unless you know, you bring them in to the conversation. So Ben, what do you think about all this? Do you think free work is something that should be done or is that something people should avoid?
I think it's up to the person. I think it varies, but there are some people who are like, my time is valuable. I would never do it. And I can respect it. And there are a lot of people who, like you, see it as an opportunity to get work, or whether that person's involved or not, or maybe they, maybe their work, you know, for me, I'm in that group. I've done free work. I did free work to just start in this world, you know, just to, right. to get a shot essentially, right? Yeah, like, you know, same. Prove mm-hmm. I could do it. And, I don't do free work anymore, but, well, right. that's not true. I do, you know, I try to do stuff for nonprofits now and then, and I can see like, man, if you want to give away some work, choosing a good cause is also another way to do that. You know, there's an organization that does good work. If there's, you know, if there's somebody who's making an impact and you can further that impact and help them be better, that's a great thing to do for and sure. a great way to get involved. So, I mean, there's so many different ways to do it. I just think, I don't know. I hate blanketing things with right or wrong because I think, you know,
it's a very personal decision.
It's very personal decision. And I just think that, I don't know, like some people are privileged enough. And I'll admit I am a very privileged person. I have a lot of advantages, you know, on my side, and that has empowered me to be able to be free with my time and to do a lot of things and to help people and maybe take on projects that other people wouldn't or couldn't. And, you know, if I was in a different situation, I don't know if I would be able to do that. And so, sure. You know, I just think it's hard. It just really depends on where you're at and you know, it's what kind of freedoms you really have. So,
yeah, I think another point to that, to where it's like, so like when I started out, let me step back. I believe that all of this we're talking about, all of these projects, all of this are just solutions. We're providing people with solutions to their problems, whether it's a web app or a website or mobile app. They have a problem. They need you to fix it. You can go, like, I love what Ben was saying of, like, you can go help nonprofits. I mean, go look up people in your local area who are serving your community who 100%. Need help with their web presence and offer to do that service for them. And it benefits both of you. And I think that you can serve in that way without, you know, like, it feeling like free work. It's impactful work, but you're also learning. And someone's going to see that, but you're going to be able to show other people.
Mm-hmm. It's a win for everyone.
Yes.
Yeah. And whether that's a good cause or like you said, you know, if there's maybe it's a celebrity or maybe it's just somebody really awesome in your community who does good things and their business has great impact. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe it's, you know, or it's just a business that has a really great story to tell and you want to help tell that story. You know, that's honestly, whenever I work mostly off recommendations now, but when I do cold email or cold call and I'm looking for work, you know, I pick companies and I pick organizations that I feel like I look at their branding and I'm like, yes, like this is, it's incredible branding. And it's not just it's the look, it's the attitude, it's the work they do, it's the story they tell, it's how they tell it. And it's like, I want to work with that client. I want
right.
that is in my wheelhouse and that's something I want to do. You know, so there's so many different things involved, but I think honestly, we've talked about this time and time again, but it goes back to when I used to do video production. It's how some people don't like the no code movement, but the truth is, if you get the results that you want, it doesn't matter. Right. And so if you take that free work and then, you know, 3 years you're doing these huge client projects, guess what? That was probably, you know, it was could have been a great decision, still could have been about, you never know, right? Like there's so many things that play into your story. So anyway.
For sure. Yeah, that was a tangent that I started. But getting back on track, I think it's also worth pointing out, or piggybacking off of what you said a few minutes back, you know, this work is valuable. You know, if you can build a web app in Bubble or something like that, and, you know, an agency is charging, you know, X amount, like there's no reason, if the scope is the same, it doesn't matter how big the teams are, or, you know, if you can both build the same project, the exact same project, and you can build it with no code tools, it doesn't mean it's any less valuable. It just means you're more efficient and can get the job done. So don't be afraid to charge. That's a big, very, very important thing. And charge accordingly. So, so moving on, I think it's important to talk about, you know, who's writing the content, which is always a challenge for me personally. You know, when I'm building websites, it's always like, we'll have the initial conversation in the beginning. And this is really tricky for me because they'll be like, oh yeah, we'll write the content. But then the content is like very poorly written. So I think that's a big thing, to talk about early on and kind of gauge as much as possible, you know, whether you're going to have to write the content, whether you're going to have to hire a copywriter. These are all just things to think about when you're pricing no-code projects. How do both of you handle content?
Yeah, so I typically start out with content pointers of here's how I'm designing it and here's what I'm thinking like needs to go in these places. But I end up almost always writing 90% of it myself. but that's also something that I've, you know, really studied and honed in on because it's difficult for me to separate the design of it and the content of it. I really like to do like a kind of a holistic approach to it, but I've also, you know, I've worked with teams of people who they handle the other stuff. So it just depends on their setup, but I like to have some insight or some, you know, way to be a part of the content portion of it.
I'm not going to write your content. It's not what I do. I mean, it's not that I haven't, I will, but typically I have a few things like content, is one of them in my contract that basically I will tell you, you know, you'll provide the content to me. And I have a thing about, you know, it's going to be delivered in a timely manner. I'm going to deliver the design in a timely manner. If you need me to write the content, I'll provide you an additional quote or estimate for that work, because I'm going to charge you more if I'm writing. It's just, it takes a lot of time. And to me, there's a reason people say content is king. Because content is king. It really, I mean, it matters. If you're writing for your clients, you're providing them more value than anything that you're building, right? Like that's good content really helps, helps a brand speak or a company speak and deliver that message. And that's valuable. And absolutely. So I always charge on top. If they're going to have me scrape content, I'm going to charge you extra. If I have to compile that content, I'm going to charge you extra.
Yeah.
You know, part of the way I write it is, I'm going to design around your content. So I want your content first so I can figure out what needs to be on the page. But you know, I don't care how you give it to me, you know, Word docs,
please don't give me images on a Word doc though.
It's gotta be text, but I'll take WordPerfect. I'll take text. Sure. I don't care. Give me something that I can copy and paste. Right. That's the main thing. And typically it's Google Docs. I mean, honestly, that's a lot of that or Microsoft Word, but just give me the content and then, you know, I'll design around it and we'll go from there. But I don't like, you know, anything on top of that. If I've got to, you know, and then the other piece for me is I have spreadsheets that I provide that basically helps them organize, like a list of pages, and then they can link to the documents that have content that go on that page. So it's kind of like a document map. If I have to put that together and you can't put that together, I'm going to charge you extra because I'm organizing your content, you know. And so it's just different pieces. And then there, because there are some clients who really come with it all together, and they know how they want their menus to lay out, and they know what that user experience should be like. And then there's some where you're shaping that, and that's part of what you're being paid for. But at the same time, you know, all those extra pieces, that's where scope creep can get you, right? Like it's 100%. Okay, well, we've got the content, don't worry about it. Okay, great. You know, a month later, I still have no content, or I get content, it's half written, there's not enough there. You know, how am I supposed to work with this? Because you gave me these grand schemes of this is what you're going to do or you want to do. And that's wonderful, but you don't have the content to do it, you know? And so now we're having to, you know, and if for like for me on my payments, I always take a percentage down to get the work started. And then I get, you know, more money on completion. And so if I took some of the money down and now we have to reduce the scope of the project, it's really, you know, that can be difficult because, you know, it really changes things. So I don't know. For me, that's always really hard. And that's one of the things I spend a lot of time talking about is content. What do you have and why and where is it at? How is it stored and who wrote it? And do you like it? You know, and that sort of thing. So because that's super important.
You make a really good point about deposits, and that's something that we don't have on the outline, but should be there. I generally operate the same system. I do 50% upfront, 50% at the end on completion. And then I limit revisions definitely because I know there's scope creep. And I'm always like, you know, a while back I was like, okay, I'm going to start putting scope, like I'm going to start tightening the scope in the contracts. But then the one thing I didn't look for out on the back end was the revisions and like limiting that because that gets out of hand very quickly as well. How do you guys handle revisions? Do you have a limit? Like I know mine is 2 right now, 2 rounds of revisions. I think I kind of define it in the contract itself, like what constitutes a revision? Is it major? Is it minor? Things of that nature. How do you handle that?
Yeah, I do 2 rounds of revisions. And then after that, I charge usually, I think what I've been doing is I charge a third of the project price per revision after that. That way it pushes them to make their revisions
right
during those revision rounds and not after.
Same, depending on the client, really. Is, you know, everything for me is in flux. Like if there's a client, as I'm scoping it and I know I want the project, but I know they might come with more revisions, I'm like Lacey, I'm going to incentivize them to do very few revisions and to really think about what they want before they send off an email, to me. So that we're really thinking things through. But there's some clients where, man, you're just so geeked about the project and you know that if they come back to you with a revision, it's going to be like mind blowing and it's going to be great. And so you want all, you know, like you welcome it. It really just, it really depends on that project. So
go for it.
Oh, I was going to say, and for me, one thing, like if they're a repeat client, and I know how they roll and we have a rhythm of how we do things.
Right.
As long as I don't feel like that's being abused in the, you know, the, our process, I'm totally fine with it. And, you know, I will do multiple revisions for them. If they're repeat, if we have a relationship and it's like, oh, we just didn't quite
communicate
here on this. It's just more to keep because, you know, like sometimes clients and not meaning to, but they'll just keep changing and changing and changing things and it will never launch. And we end up with this like really bloated thing where we've deviated so far from where we started. So I think it's really important to keep a handle on revisions, but also, you know, like we're all human. We can't expect that we're always going to be on our game the first time around. So there's some leeway there, but I think if you have a good client, they're not misusing that, then.
I think both of you, go
ahead.
I was going to say, I think both of you touched on a good point that this is a very nuanced conversation. Things depend very much so on the client. You know, if this is a client that you think is going to be problematic, maybe you tighten down that scope and you tighten down revisions, but maybe it's someone you really want to work with and you know they've got a good track record. So, you know, you can be a lot more lenient. So, Ben, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I think this is the hardest part of it all because I think so much of it is learning how to read a client. Like it's almost like playing poker. Mm-hmm. Like you've got to be able to understand what they say and what they mean. And you know, are those two different things? Cause you have some clients who do a really good job selling themselves to you. Mm-hmm. And then you get on the project and it's not that way. And over time you kind of start to get a feel for it. And I think the most successful people I've met are not only talented, but are really good at that part of it, of reading a client and just walking away from things when they, you know, if your gut is screaming to you, I feel like this could be painful. Listen, listen, because you know, that there'll be more money. Somebody else will have money to give you for another project. It's not worth the headache that you will endure, you know? So really being really paying attention to those pieces is, it's super important,
man. You know? Everything is like just such a learning experience. I think this is like the one thing. It just each experience compounds, and like my BS detector actually has gotten pretty good with clients nowadays. It's like I can tell, generally speaking, who the good clients are going to be versus who the problematic ones are. And I think it's just something you get with time. I mean, Ben, you've got me lapped on experience in terms of how long you've been in web design, like, and how long you've been freelancing. So, are there any like things that you look out for other than, you know, maybe not filling out their homework, but other things early on in terms of red flags?
Yeah, I listen to what they're saying, and I try to ask all the questions to figure out where they're at, you know. So a little more detail there. So if they're saying, oh, I really like this website, And if you listen to them, they're like, I really just want a copy of this website. Red flag. Right. You know, that's no go. You're not going to steal someone else's work. They're always going to be wanting to, you know, if you see clients who, you know, it's good to get a mood board from them, but if they want very specific things that other people have, I've typically found that to be a red flag, because it's hard to sell original design that meets their brand, because so-and-so saw this and they, you know, they, it's their second year in marketing and somehow they're in charge of the whole project. And now they basically want this competitor's website, which is great. Yeah. The competitor's website's great, but that's not you. Right. And so, if you can't get them to frame the conversation around who they are and what story they want to tell, I typically find that they're going to be difficult to work with. And you know, I think the really big indicator is, can they give you an elevator pitch about what they're doing? And, you know, can they really give you their company in a nutshell? And then I look for passion. I want to work with passionate people. And I found that, some of my best clients are the most passionate people who really care about the work they do and are really just 1,000% in, because that's how I view myself. And so if I see a client really talking in a connected way about their company and their clients or the people that they work with, and you know, that's a really good opportunity for me, I feel like. But if I see someone who feels disconnected and this feels ho-hum to them, that's dangerous. Other red flags, people who are and this might be an unfair characterization, but if I get into a meeting and people are checking their phones the entire time and they're just not engaged, I don't want to fight for the attention of the client. That tends to be a red flag as well. You know, and then I watch how they treat the people in their office. Like, as soon as I walk in, it's like I'm a detective. I want to see how do they treat the people they work with, right? Like,
no detective.
Yes. Well, it's one of those things, like when they talk to, if they talk to somebody who's working in the reception area and they're like, you know, I've had times when I've walked in and there'll be a super nice lady sitting behind the counter and it'll be like, hey honey, why don't you get us some coffee? I'm like, okay, I don't know if I want to work with these people at all. Like, and that might be super unfair, but I just don't, or if they're really rude or short with the people they work with, but they're kind to you, guess what? At some point that's going to snap and they're going to be rude to you.
Yeah.
If you know, I like to see how do they talk to the people around them? What's that attitude that they carry? And it's just trying to take all those things and put them together. And you know, for me, if I see one red flag at this point, I don't do it. And nothing's ever going to be perfect. It's not, you're never going to have a problem with a client, but You know, sometimes you look at the, if you look at the project, you go, man, there's risk here, but gosh, the payoff is going to be great. I mean, congratulations. That's really awesome. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy for you. And I think that you can do really cool things. But for me, like, can't we all just get along? Like, I just want to work with really cool people and build right. cool things. And so, yeah, those are some of the things that I look at.
So one of the things that you talked about, which I think is really interesting, is something I think should also be included in most people's contracts. It's, you know, fighting for their attention. Be sure when you're building an app for someone else, like, your time is valuable too, regardless of what any other client tries to tell you, your time is worthwhile. Especially as, you know, let's call it what it is. You are a developer, you're an engineer. So you've got things to do, you've got things to be building. So I know in my contracts, like, I require people, it's like, yo, you have like 2 weeks or a week to get back to me about, you know, this question, or if I request these files, because that's a big way that I think things can get derailed as well. And if you end up in that scenario, you know, maybe talk about charging for it, because again, you know, the time wasted is time that comes out of essentially your pocket.
Yeah. And it's hard. I mean, it's one of those things too, like when you get off track, it's good to try to pick somebody at the company that you do have a good relationship with and say, you know, get them on your side. Like, hey, I really need this to get it done. Like, can you spearhead this on your end? And how can we work together to make this happen? And what can I do to help you get the information that I need, you know? And typically you'll find an ally, you know, somebody who can help you. But I do the same thing. I have a whole provision, you know, about if I don't get things in a timely manner, I'll just charge you for the work that I've done and I'll walk away.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and that's fine. I don't need to keep doing this. I'll just, you know, I'll invoice you for what's past, you know, if the down payment covers it, great. If not, I'll invoice you for what's left and then I'll give you the work and then I'll step back and somebody else can jump in and do this. So.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I agree.
So, you know, what
we've
else?
What,
we've covered a lot, and there's so much more on this list, know. You know, but there's a lot of back end stuff. You know, anytime you're doing any back end logic, if you're doing automation, you've got to price appropriately for that, because that costs money. Mm-hmm. You know, a good way to know what to charge is there are different sites out there. I forget, maybe it's Crew. I don't know if that even exists anymore, but they were a website that helped connect people who built apps with people who were needing developers. And they had a really cool pricing guide. I love to get on there and just say, like, it needs this kind of functionality, and it just upped the price. And I used that for a long time to try to figure out what I was charging, you know, on my projects. And I think it's, I'll try to find a similar guide that we can link to here, but yeah, look and see what are developers charging, you're providing the same service. You know, Matt mentioned on here, seeing potential roadblocks ahead of time. You know, if you're building a Webflow and you know that, you know, your client's going to need specific functionality that they're not going to get in the editor, how are you going to handle that? What does that look like? How do you, or hey, Webflow will do everything but ABC. That guy, it misses on that one thing. How do we make this work, and what no code tools can I, and you want to be clear and upfront with the client, like, this will exist outside, and oh yeah, you're going to have to pay for a Zapier too, exactly. Because that's what's going to make this roll. So
I know back in the day, what I ended up doing is, like, let's say, and this is a problem, like 2 years ago, whenever I was like new to Zapier and, you know, kind of still figuring things out, like, the client would ask for some feature and I thought it would be native to the platform, and it ended up not being native. And I'm like, okay, they can get away on Zapier's free plan for a while. So I'll open the account in my name and it'll work out. But then, you know, the company grows, because that's definitely the goal over time. And, you know, then that Zap runs out of, or it hits the ceiling, limitations. And then 2 years later, you have to have an awkward conversation. It's like, hey, so there's actually this outside service, and you just don't want to have that conversation. So try to be as upfront as possible about everything, about all costs involved. I just think that's so, so, so important. And it's just, like, it's less headache for you too.
Yeah. And I think as you're in these, you know, you're using different no-code platforms. Like, let's say, for instance, you're building a membership site. So let's say you're going to go with Webflow hosting, MemberStack hosting, and then you've got to also account for your payment processing, so Stripe too. And I tell my clients up front, hey, here are these, here's what I'm going to use to build this, unless you have something else you prefer that I use, which most of them never do. But telling them these costs, like, I'm going to send you a way for you to put your credit card information in. I'm not putting mine in. And
yeah,
it works so much better because, like, I have like old, I bought domains for clients, and getting those switched and onto their, you know, credit cards is, you wouldn't think it's right. That hard, but it's, you know, it's just a, yep. it's just a whole process.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's a whole process. Well, and you bring up another point that it's actually another red flag. You know, if you're working with somebody, and it's different if you're working with someone in the tech industry and they're experts too, that's great. But another red flag is if you're working with a client who doesn't do this and they don't know much about it, but they know more than you, red flag, right? Like, if they are experts and they've never done it before, that's another red flag. So, so many great things on this list. We had so many more. We've gone for, how long have we been going for now, Matt? You've got a timer up.
An hour and 5 minutes. So okay, we should probably wrap
this up. We should probably call this good.
What are these? Who added these last two? You know, the person who wrote those, want to talk about them?
Oh, I did. I think we did. But what I was just saying in summary is, like, I think when you're actually pricing your projects, it's always been helpful for me to understand, all right, if I'm building this for you, what are you going to do with it? Is it going to be some marketing for you? Are you going to use this to sell your products?
Yeah.
And understanding, okay, like, if you have, you know, let's say your highest tier is $1,000 for a membership. Okay. So this membership, you only need, you know, 10 of those and you can cover my cost, which would be 10,000. So I gauge, you know, that's a hypothetical, but like I gauge on trying to understand what the value is in it for them and what they're going to do with it. And then that helps me have a better understanding of how to price, because with the work involved, the expectations, those kind of things. And then the other thing I was going to say, I think we talked about this earlier, was that your client will come to you or can come to you and say, okay, like, here's what I want. I know what I want. But your client is an expert in what they do, most likely not an expert in building products. Yeah. And so it's very helpful to let them share everything that they want to share about this. And if you have some insight that you can help guide them, 100% jump into that, because you don't want to get down the line and something falls apart or isn't what they expected. And then they're like, well, why didn't you tell me? You know, this is your thing. And so I have a client that I'm working with right now, and they were like, okay, here's what I want to use for the database. And here's what I want to do, this and this. And I was like, well, actually, have you considered this? It's cheaper, it's faster, and it's just all around better product. And, but being able to come in, it's like, you know, you are building trust with them and rapport with them. You
right.
don't just want to, you know, regurgitate this information or product. Like, you actually want to help them and guide them.
Right.
Well, I think the rules to follow, I mean, people are going to laugh about this. These are guiding principles for me when I price it. One, I'm not going to price it cheap. I'm going to charge money. But one, love people. I mean, truly, if you're working with somebody, you know, and people are like, it's business, it's ruthless. I'm not that way. Mm-hmm. And I think you can make money and not be, and I'm going to cuss here, but not be an asshole.
Right.
I think that you can do that. And so I think it's about treating people right, giving them respect. You're mm-hmm. dead on. It's earning their trust. Mm-hmm. And it's pricing for what you're worth. And, mm-hmm. I mean, the advice I could give, if I could give any advice to anybody, it's don't be afraid to walk away from a project. If people don't think you're worth that, that's great. That's just fine. Like I said, it might hurt the first couple of times it happens, but once you land that one, once you hit that first one, then it's okay. Now I'm on to the next one. And on to the next one. And like Matt said, you can keep doubling your prices and upping that fee and making good money. And what it allows you to do is to really provide that value. There's nothing worse than Because people say it doesn't happen, but there's nothing worse than being in the middle of a project. You're getting close to the end. There's this grind, and you're like, they're only paying me X, Y, and Z. I'm just gonna, like, this will be good enough. And then you, like, I've seen, like, I've had friends literally message me, like, I'm done with this part now. And you don't want to be that person. You want to be the person who's at, you know, if you're going 100 miles with this client, you're at the 99th mile and you're still at a full out sprint, you know. If you're sprinting 100 miles, that's something. It's a bad analogy, but if you're not pushing all the way through the finish line, that's bad. That's you're not giving that client the experience they deserve, and that goes back to that first principle. You're not really loving them, treating them with respect, or giving them what they deserve. And so, you want to price the project so that when you're in that moment and you're dealing with all the, because to me the funnest part is making the functionality work. It's designing the grind is getting all the content in, and you know. Search for typos, and we do all the checks for different browsers, and you know there's all these different pieces, and it's the final details, the meta information, and you're just going through all, and you're exporting all the images that you need and optimizing, and it's over and over and over and over and over again. If you can't do that and do it with everything you have and really give that client what they deserve, then you didn't price it high enough, you know. And so but I digress. So we should probably.
I think that wrapped it up. Charge what you're worth. Get your contracts.
If you're going to try to recap this podcast in two minutes,
that was
an hour and 10 minutes long.
That was a bad idea. I take it back.
You're right. You're right. You know, it is those contracts. It's where's the content coming from. It's how do you pick the client. It's how do you see roadblocks. It's all those different pieces. It's how you treat people. I mean, it all matters. It all matters, you know.
100%. Yeah.
So, all right. So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week. We've got some great stuff coming. We're excited about, but looking forward to this whole new year. And thanks so much for listening. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to visualdev.fm. You can find us on your favorite social media platform at visualdev.fm.